Chapter 4
"Lawrence, I hope you will forgive me," Granby said, low, while across the way Caesar continued his depredations upon the livestock which Rankin had evidently intended for his first week of feedings. "I didn't mean to say a word, unless you should manage to harness the beast. But he has, and there is no way around it. You must let me go between and make up the quarrel."
"I beg your pardon," Lawrence said, doubtfully, certain he had misunderstood. But Granby shook his head and said,
"I know it's not what you're used to, but pray don't be stiff-necked about it. There can't be two captains in a covert at dagger-ends forever and anon, and you can't fight him. So it must be made up, whatever you think of the blighted wretch," he added,
rather failing at conciliation. It was by no means what Lawrence was used to. The thought of offering Rankin anything so like apology for an act which had been richly merited by his behaviour, and which Lawrence would gladly have drawn swords to justify, appalled more than he could easily bear.
"You needn't think of it that way," Granby said, "for it's only that you have the heavier beast, you know. That is the rule. It's for you to make the first gesture. He can't without looking shy. And it don't signify you aren't a captain any more in the official way, because that doesn't make Temeraire vanish into the air."
Lawrence could not be so easily reconciled, despite all the obvious sense in the policy, to a gesture which to him partook of the worst part of both withdrawal and deceit.
"For I do not withdraw, John. I cannot withdraw in the least. It would be rankest falsehood for me to pretend in any way to regret my actions, or any offence which was given by them, and under the circumstances such a withdrawal must bear a character of self-interest which I must despise." "Lord, I'm not saying you must truckle to the fellow," Granby said with a look half affection and half exasperation. "Nothing of the sort. You only need to let me go forward and have a word with him, and then you shan't speak of it again, either of you. That is all. No one will think any less of you. The contrary, for it would be rotten for the Dragonette, you know. If you are giving his captain the go-by, it must make a quarrel between him and Temeraire too, and you can't say that is fair."
This argument had too much justice for Lawrence to ignore. He managed barely to make himself nod once, by way of granting permission, and looked the other way when Rankin joined Granby's table that night in a small hostelry for the dinner which should honour his promotion. Granby cast a worried look at him, sidelong, and said to Rankin in tones of slightly excessive heartiness,
"I'm afraid Caesar means to lead you something of a merry chase, sir. A most determined beast."
Granby, who had more knowledge of the management of a determined, if not obstreperous, beast than any 10 men, might have been pardoned for some degree of private satisfaction in this remark.
"If it is any consolation," he had said to Lawrence earlier,
rather more frankly,
"the little beast is his just deserts anyway. How I will laugh to see him dragged hither and yon, protesting all he likes that Caesar must obey. That creature won't take being shot off in a corner and left to rot."
Lawrence could not wholly take amusement in any part of the circumstances which forced him to endure Rankin's company, but he did not deny a certain grim satisfaction, which became incredulous when Rankin answered coolly,
"You are very mistaken, Captain Granby. I anticipate nothing of the sort.
That there has been some mismanagement of the egg I cannot dispute," Rankin added, "nor that his hatching did not give cause for concerns such as you have described. But I have been most heartened since those first moments to find Caesar a most complacent creature by nature. Indeed, it is not too far to say I think him a most remarkable beast, quite out of the common way in intelligence and in tractability." Lawrence forgot his feelings in bemusement, and Granby looked equally at a loss for response when, so far as they had seen, Caesar had spent the afternoon demonstrating only an insistent gluttony. Perhaps Rankin chose to deceive himself, rather than think himself overmatched, Lawrence wondered. But Rankin added, with a self-satisfaction that seemed past mere wishful thinking,
"I have already begun instructing him on better principles, and I have every hope of shaping him into the attentive and obedient beast which must be the ambition of every aviator. Already he begins to partake of my sentiments and understanding as he ought, and to value my opinion over all others."
"Well," Granby said doubtfully. Then, "Mr. Forthing, the bottle stands by you,"
and the conversation limped away into a fresh direction. But in the morning Lawrence was astonished to find Rankin at the promontory, with a book, to attend Caesar's breakfast. He seated himself at Caesar's side and began to read to the dragonette as the beast ate, an aviation manual of some sort, Lawrence collected from what he overheard, although the language was very peculiar.
"Oh, he has never dug up that antique thing," Granby said with disgust, and added, "It is from the Tudor age, I think, all about how to manage a dragon. We read it in school, but I cannot think of anyone who gives it a thought any more."
Caesar listened very attentively, however, while he gnawed on a bone, and said earnestly, "My dear Captain, I cannot disagree at all. It seems very sensible indeed. Pray do you think I ought to try and manage another sheep? I take it quite to heart what the book says about the importance of early feeding. If it accords with your judgment, of course. I am wholly willing to be guided by your superior experience, but I must say I find I am so much better able to attend when I am quite full."